but still all Coleman. We are Coleman's independent radio station. Live 95, WRJMLP, Coleman. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. And now, it's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Metherly.
Welcome back to another edition of Understanding the Law. Triple Threat is in the house. Little D, Coleman attorney, marvelous Melvin Hastings. Your host, Big D, Bruiser Brody, is in the house, along with Charmin. Champ Crocker.
I don't know about that.
Charmin Champ Crocker is in the house. I put a lot of thought in that. It took me about 2 seconds. So we are filled with attorneys in studio.
I was trying to decide what would be a good nickname for Champ. Charmin probably does fit him.
It does fit him.
He said that was his wrestling name.
Yeah, that's his wrestling name now.
Just don't call me late for supper.
We will not call you late. Charmin Champ.
So yeah, look, I have Mr. Brody here.
Bruiser Brody is in the house, by the way.
He's the CFO of my law office, the chief financial officer.
There you go.
I'm going to fire him if he don't start bringing me some more money in.
Well, he needs to write Big D a check for something. I don't care what it is. And Bruiser Brody has got some baseball that's fixing to go on over in Vinemont, so he's going to be swinging the big stick.
Yeah, baseball season's in full swing, so literally full swing.
Yes. I love baseball, by the way. Of course, you know I'm a huge Chicago Cubs fan. Always will be. So, Mom and Dad lived across the street from Wrigley Field back in the 60s. So, huge Cubs fan.
That is neat. So, you've been up there. So, did you live in Chicago?
I was born in Chicago.
You were born in Chicago.
Yeah. So, all my family is from Jefferson County and Walker County. And Dad hitchhiked in the early 60s and made it to Jack's truck stop and asked a driver, said, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to Chicago." He says, "Can I have a ride?" And he did. So a day or two later, he got a job in a candy factory and ended up at Ford Motor Company.
Lord,
so, about that. 1972, we moved back to Birmingham in the ghetto right off Finley Avenue.
The first time I've ever been to Chicago was this past summer. Going to Wrigley Field is kind of cool.
It is.
Cool. Never had a ball game. Never been there. Have you ever been there for a ball game, Champ?
Yes. Great. Sit in the outfield. And
that's probably neat.
Yeah, it is, man. That's good times right there.
Get to ride the above the rail.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Good food in Chicago, too, by the way. Mm-hmm. Excellent food. If you can withstand the wind off Lake Michigan, you got it made. Because it is cold. The wind never stops.
No, and it's kind of crazy. I mean, I heard about the beaches, but you'd think, oh, it's just a little bit of sand out there. But it's really a beach. I mean, it is like, it's neat. Yeah. I mean, it's just like going to the Gulf Shores. I mean, it's not as big, of course, but it's still like the real deal beach.
Yeah.
And it's full of bodies.
Floating casinos everywhere. Yeah, it's nice.
It's a neat little town.
Not to live, but it's a nice little town to visit. So, look, it's a sunny day. So, nice weather today, so I guess that means the criminals were out and about giving y'all some business today.
They probably moved around. There is a, and Champ can fill you in on this one, too, because I was thinking about this today. So we had misdemeanor courts. One thing was going on in district court today, so it was misdemeanor court, and so that's criminal charges, of course, that gets you up to a year in jail if you're convicted, and in circuit court, they have civil jury week. Do they have a case going on, Champ? Do you know?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, you have a case going on. What kind of a case is it?
It's a car wreck case. Okay. We just finished our second day, and we go back tomorrow, hopefully, to finalize it.
Yeah, so you have a jury trials then now, you know, and most of the time that's probably what they are, is car wrecks. Every once in a while you get the medical malpractice and some other kind of negligence claims or whatever else for a civil jury case. So
car wrecks, we're going after the insurance company for their money. Is that basically what we're doing?
You're doing what you can do. Get you a verdict.
There you go.
Lay the facts out and kind of see what happens to them.
Yeah, I would say most civil cases that get tried are automotive cases. Like Melvin said, we've got slip and fall cases up there, medical malpractice cases, other types of torts. But most of the time, it's some sort of vehicular collision that goes to court. And, talking about the jury system, I don't know if y'all have ever talked about this before. People get summonses in the mail to report for jury duty.
Right.
Some civil, some criminal. And a lot of people don't understand how that strike process works, how you end up on a jury. I know, Melvin, as many cases you've tried, you know. I mean, we show up, and by the time they excuse people and divide them up to different courtrooms, you have usually 36 to 40 people on this panel. And the lawyers for each side question them, and the 12 people who end up in the jury box are the ones who neither side struck. Each side gets an equal number of strikes. And I had somebody ask me one time, well, you know, how do I get picked for a jury? Well, you don't get picked to be on the jury. It's just by process of elimination, your other people – were picked to be off the jury,
right.
and so you end up there.
And it is a number system. You know what I'm saying? So you don't know who's striking you or whatever else. Each juror's got their name has got a number associated with it. So when it's the striking process, you're just taking them off. You know, in a civil case, it's somewhat different than a criminal case. You're trying to get an idea how do they feel about lawsuits, you know, and how they feel about plaintiff's lawyers and defensive lawyers, and sometimes it's harder. It's hard, you know, and then you're trying to think, well, do I want somebody on there that's medical, has a little bit of medical knowledge, or do I not want somebody on medical knowledge?
Right.
Somebody that's been, you know, of course, somebody that's been sued before. You know, if they've been in a lawsuit, a defendant lawsuit, they're probably not a good prospective juror for a plaintiff. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of an art, and you know, and they're important, man, because – as Champ can tell you, once you get to this level, that's pretty well it.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
It's in their hands.
It's in their hands, and you're going to be stuck with what happens.
Exactly.
Now then, the exception is when they go a little overboard, which is nice for the plaintiffs, but if they go overboard, then you got to worry about trying to save your verdict from the appeals court, and sometimes that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on and on, so... So, you know, in a lot of these car wrecks, you know, the sometimes it's not the issue of who's at fault, which it does. Sometimes it gets to be an issue, but most of the time it's the damage issue in it. That's what we're trying, is the amount of damages, you know.
So, Champ, if we see that we're winning, is it the jury's authority, the jury's duty to come up with a dollar amount that you win?
Yes. You know, in most cases, the defense will say, you know, contributory negligence, fine for the defendant, even if there's not a realistic chance that's going to happen. A lot of defendants will never concede liability, but then it's up to a jury to decide what the amount is. In most cases, there's a pretrial offer. So if there's a pretrial offer of $5, and the plaintiff says, no, I want 10, but a jury hears the case and comes back with a verdict for 2. Well, that's a verdict for the plaintiff,
right.
But that's really a win for the defense. And
okay.
So that's part of it, too, is that, you know, a plaintiff wants to win on liability. Yes, they're responsible, but they also want to get an amount of damages that you know, covers their medical bills, attorney's fees, right. pain and suffering, litigation expenses, all of those things, because civil lawsuits are expensive.
That's what I was going to head. That's what the next one. People don't understand how much just to be able to get it to a jury trial costs you a lot of money. Right. You know what I'm saying? Because you're going to have to not only connect, hey, that my person, okay, my person is not at fault at it, you know, not fault at it for the accident or for the injuries or whatever else. The you've got to get past the, hey, their damages that they're saying are associated with whatever happened. So let's just talk about a car wreck, you know. This guy's got neck pain. Well, you know, the defense may say, hey, he had neck pain 2 years ago from some other prior right. something. You know, some of that may come out. And then they may try to say that, well, you know what, that wreck wasn't hard enough to cause that amount of damages, that amount of neck pain. He you know, he's over-exaggerating. That's, you know, missing work and stuff like that. So, there, you know, you got to get it there. You know, you got to spend the money on get the doctor's depositions. You got to get the doctor. You got to get the medical providers there. And that's not
right.
easy, and it's definitely not cheap. I've been there.
and they are expensive. And most lawyers who handle these cases don't ask the client for money. Most lawyers handle these on a percentage or a contingency okay. fee. And the lawyer will front those expenses and then get those back out of any recovery they get. Because otherwise, the plaintiffs in those cases couldn't afford to get to court
right.
in a lot of cases.
So I think, Melvin, did you say one time it was 15%? Is that correct?
No, now that is the law on a workers' compensation
okay.
case.
Okay, so what is the percentage of this man that just got $1 million?
That is something that's usually negotiated in a contract, usually up front. You say, hey, look, you know, if I – and some of them do it different ways. Okay. But if I settle this thing without having to go to trial, we may do this. You know, if we go to trial, it would be this amount or whatever else. But, you know, a lot of it, as Champ's going to tell you, depends on what kind of case, what kind of facts do you have. You know, if you're really going to have to – I mean, a good car wreck, a lawyer can sink – $4,000 or $5,000 of his own money in it real easy.
No, I'm sure.
Real fast. You know what I'm saying? And and a lot of times, depending on the situation, how much money's out there or how much potential money's out there, where you're trying this case at, you know, you sink $5,000 in this thing, the jury gives you $10,000, you ain't won nothing.
Right.
And your client hadn't won nothing.
Exactly.
And normally a third is okay. a standard
yes.
For the attorney's fees, but that depends on other factors, the complexities of the case, the risk involved, and so forth. But I would say it's a general rule.
Okay.
It's roughly a third.
Which is not bad, because you're the person that went to law school. You're the person that's got the knowledge to sit there and give them exactly what they need. I mean, look, let's face it. It's about making a paycheck, and if I was an attorney, I want a paycheck too.
Yes.
So that's just the bottom line. Especially if you can get a decent return.
Because not every case you get to a jury is going to give you
exactly.
zero.
Exactly, that's what
and
I'm saying.
I've got some of those zero verdicts before, and I know what you know, it's like to sink your money.
Out of 100 and you have 50 cases that you don't make hardly anything off of,
yes.
you need to have a paycheck at least once.
And some weeks it'd be good to have a paycheck.
Yeah, that'd be nice, yeah. Yeah, a regular paycheck, it would be.
Poor old Champ's driving a Ford Pinto out here in the parking lot. Y'all need to donate a GoFundMe. Get him a nice car.
But these, you know, there's a lot to the case. For instance, I've got, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit in a few minutes, but there's another case that I've got now that's got a decent amount of money involved in it. But, you know, people don't understand, if you don't know the law and you don't do this every day, negotiating out costs and stuff. See, okay, I'll just give you an example. So there's $200,000 out here on this case, insurance money or money that's available to pay. You got a $133,000 hospital bill.
Right.
Well, Mr. Joe Blow is not going to be able to go out there and negotiate. I don't care what you do with that hospital. I mean, they're going to think, hey, if I can get in the hospital, they're going to say, hey, if I can get $75,000 of that, and the person that doesn't know may say, hey, you know what? I ain't got to pay $133,000. I just paid $75,000
right.
for it. Well, you just cut the amount of money you got down a whole lot. whereas a lawyer may get that down to $20,000-$25,000
right. mm-hmm.
depending on the situation. So in the end, you can, I mean, it's about negotiating out yes. bills and costs. Sometimes it's paying the bills. I mean, I went on another guy just to settle his case. I went and wrote $16,000 at Huntsville Hospital one time to pay his bill off. Wow. But we recovered it. You know what I'm saying? In the future. But Huntsville Hospital came to us at that time. He had a $100,000 bill. They said, look, if you pay 16 days, we'll take it. And I was like, all right, here it is. You know what I'm saying? Because I knew how much money was out there to recover right. on it. He would have never had that opportunity.
Exactly.
He would have had a $100,000 bill he had to exactly. deal with.
File bankruptcy and be done with it.
So, and then, you know, the thing about that is, if he had filed the bankruptcy, then any money he would have got paid in would have went through the trustee and the hospital right. would have got a chunk mm-hmm. of it anyway.
Exactly.
So you got to have them. And I don't know of any situation, because sometimes there are people that comes in and gets free legal advice. I'll talk to them about their stuff. They want to go handle their case. And almost every one of them will end up coming back saying, hey, look, this thing ain't working out for me or whatever else.
I need some help.
I say, well, where are they at on this? And then I'm like, all right, let me see what I can do. And I've always been able to double or triple what they're sitting at.
That's
you know what I'm saying? And they end up, now I make some money off of it, but they make, in the end, they come out with a lot more money in the
exactly.
end.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
On it, so
you always hire a professional if you don't know what you're doing.
You got to, because they'll definitely take advantage of you,
especially in the court of law.
Yeah. So here is my what I was going to talk about tonight. So I've got the that issue what I'm talking about, $200,000 and $133,000 medical bill is a real issue. That's one I'm handling right now, and we're actually trying to get more than 200, trying to find a way to get some more. this person is in. I mean, he had a $133,000 medical bill, and he's probably not going to be able to work for a while, if ever. And so he's got income, he's lost, and everything else. And I'm working out the hospital bill for him and working to get the money. But he has three automobiles, this person does. And he had an opportunity to have $75,000 more money to his good to help him out. But he chose to make the mistake that I tell everybody don't do it, to decline UIM coverage, to decline underinsured motorist coverage.
Big mistake.
And it was. And so when he told me that he thought he signed the papers, I was like, oh, my gosh. So I called the insurance company. They said, yeah, he declined it. I said, well, make sure you send me that signature. I want to see wow. his signature that he declined right. it. So they sent me. Sure enough, he did. And here's – and I think this is a general rule. I want Champ to see if he agrees with this. If someone's asking you to sign some document to waive your right or to give up a right, you probably don't need to do it.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? If you're if you're having to sign something, said, well, I understand that's available, but I decline that, you should never sign that document.
Right.
Never sign that document.
Absolutely. You know, the uninsured underinsured motorist coverage is cheap. It's like
yes.
$8 a month
yeah.
for $25,000 in coverage.
Right.
You don't have any control over who you're on the road with
yes.
and who's going to hit you. And it may be someone who's got no insurance or who doesn't have enough insurance to cover your injuries. And that's where this UM coverage comes in. Not only is it cheap, you can also stack it.
Yes.
If you own multiple vehicles, you can stack three cars per policy. If you own more than three vehicles, you can stack an unlimited number of policies. And what this is there to cover you. You pay premiums for it. You pay extra when you have it. The only way you don't have it is if you waive that right.
Yes.
And I tell people every day, buy the uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage. Get as much as you can
yes.
afford, because pound for pound, it's the cheapest kind of auto insurance you'll get, and you just don't know who you're on the road with. It's much better to have that in case tragedy strikes.
And generally, there we go. And generally, if you have a legitimate claim, they're going to pay the money. So I tell everybody, it really is free money. I mean,
right.
it's free money out there. Sometimes you have to fight for it, but if you have a legitimate claim, like this person has a legitimate claim, hands down, gets the money. hands down, there's no question about it, it's going to get the money.
Okay.
But there was a bad mistake, and it's costing. And, well, and it's going to cost him for the rest of his life, you know, because you can't do nothing about it. So, and you're right, Champ. I think I looked the last time they sent me some from my uninsured motors. I think $25,000 was 12, 13, 14 bucks, whatever else. And I think bumping it up, doubling it to $50,000 was like $21.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Hey, a $7 difference exactly. gives me 25 yeah. more thousand dollars.
Mm-hmm. So let me go off on a side note, and then we come back to this. So, Champ, if your guy that you're representing was in this car wreck, and we know that he can't go back to work, what is the possibility of him actually getting on disability quickly, or is he going to have to go through that year process that, like everybody else does to try to get disability?
Well, I haven't seen anything quick about the okay. disability process, and a lot of times that comes up after their civil lawsuit or insurance claim is over. I've seen it come up before, but usually just because that process takes so long when I'm dealing with the person, because I don't do disability cases, I refer those elsewhere.
Okay.
Usually with my personal injury plaintiffs, we're dealing with that before the disability process goes through. But certainly I've seen people who've gotten so bad hurt they could not go back to work, and then they're just waiting, like so many people are, for disability to get approved. It usually gets denied the first time, right. And then you have to do the appeal, which can take
just thinking, with all this evidence that we have with from the doctors saying this guy is disabled, period, he's not going back to work after this car accident, if that would not speed up the process just a little bit.
Probably their age has a lot to do with it, you know what I'm saying? Because disability is probably one of those things that I guess once you get on it, it's probably hard to get off of it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think it's one of them, once you're on it, it's not...
I guess that's a lifetime thing.
It's almost a lifetime thing, yes. You're gonna get it until you reach Social Security mm-hmm. age, and it switches Social Security.
Okay.
So that age probably has a lot of factor in it, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But, there are some injuries that's probably so significant that you're comatose in a hospital 2 or 3, 4 weeks or something like that, then you probably got a better chance, no matter what your age is.
Right.
Than someone that's got broken legs, broken arms, just can't work at this point.
Gotcha.
And there may be some kind of a temporary, I don't know, does the government offer temporary, something short temporary term? I don't know that they do they?
I don't think in
it
terms.
It would be SSI.
Not in terms of SSI. Now, in the workman's comp arena, mm-hmm. you can get temporary total disability payments while your workman's comp issue is mm-hmm. pending. And so if it's on the job, that's going to be in a separate category than if it came from a wreck or a slip and fall somewhere.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a game. It's
it is.
And it's not so much it is your knowledge, but a lot of it's just your experience, man. You got to – Champ's handled a bunch of these. I've handled quite a few of them. He's probably handled more than I have. But you learn – you learn each time you handle a case. You think, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done that. Maybe I could have done this better or whatever else. Just not gave them that information, or maybe gave them some more information. Just kind of figure out where you go. But it's
I've never understood the whole year thing. If we know for a fact that this guy's not going to work, period. He's not. No. He's never going. Why do we have that waiting game?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because he or she gets the back pay money. You know
exactly.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
If they apply for it, they get the back pay money off of it. They're going to get paid anyway.
Now, do you get back pay up until the first time that you applied?
See, the back pay starts from when you file the application for disability. It goes back to that.
Okay.
Back to the disability. It's back to the application.
Back to the application. Okay. Yes.
Which could be a good chunk of change for somebody.
Yes. Oh, it is.
If they're
it
sitting out there is. For a year.
It mm-hmm. always is. Most of them, man, they get enough to buy a new car. that's what they do.
Yeah.
Get their money and go buy them a car or something.
I bet 98% of them do that, too.
Go buy a $50,000 Mustang.
Daddy's getting a boat this weekend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they do it, So lesson number one I'm gonna talk about tonight, I'm gonna talk about another lesson in a minute, is if you're asked to sign something, you need to know what you're signing, whether it be some type of a release, some type of you declining some kind of coverage in insurance or whatever else. You need, and these people know, you know, do you want UIM coverage, uninsured motorist? Does it cost me more money? Yeah, it costs you more money. Okay, no, I don't want it. Well, they just sign it. When you say, well, what is that, and how much money does it cost me? Okay, well, you have an agent that's working for you, not for the insurance company. You got an agent that's working for you. They know. They're going to say, well, look, it gives you extra money if someone hits you don't have insurance, enough insurance. You think, I might need that. Well, how much it cost me? Oh, an extra $10-$12, whatever else. Well, would you take that? They just going to say, absolutely, I'd take it. I'd never decline UIM coverage. So you're going to do it. You just got to ask them questions and do it.
Because
so,
they're probably never going to volunteer to encourage you to take it.
A good one would.
Really?
But some of them won't. Yeah, a good one would. Yeah. Yeah, a good one would. Because, listen this. I learned this and didn't even think about it until it was brought up at one of the CLE seminars that we had. So go back to Hurricane Katrina, and you know, I just tell you, State Farm just left Mississippi and Louisiana, just left them hanging to dry. And it ain't just State Farm; some others did too. And so all these people lost everything, and all of them had to sue all these insurance companies and everything else. Well, what was brought up? One of the attorneys says we started really looking into stuff, and we started going after the agents. And what they were doing is saying, you know, these agents for like businesses and stuff like that didn't have enough coverage, didn't have the right type of coverage and everything else. He says, look, you know, if you're out here as an agent pushing and selling insurance and you're working for the person and you're not telling them what all they need, you're not giving them the right coverage. And they started going after that and they said, man, they was having a lot of success with that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because they were selling these policies, which were not enough to cover the loss, yet the agent was still getting
a nice premium for it.
Right. A premium, a commission on it.
Yes.
Those were tough cases. Sad for those folks.
Yep.
So as an agent, I mean, are you really going to have enough money to sit here and pay this out with your individual branch that you have? Or do they have insurance?
A lot of them have E&O insurance.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is going to pay.
Yeah, they definitely, I'm sure, I wouldn't doubt most agents probably has a million, don't you? I would think they probably have the $1 million policies.
Yeah.
It'd go quick. Yeah. But if you start making some mistakes like that, you would, because you know that $1 million policy is a per claim, but then they're gonna have an aggregate claim either $2 or $3 million. So
right.
You know, mm-hmm. you get 250 or 500 people coming after you, money goes fast.
Yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah, you're stuck. You know, they'll be just filing bankruptcy, and then
exactly.
that's what they're doing.
Car salesman after that.
Yeah.
So there's always a way to get around it.
Yeah. So here's the, I don't know when we're going to take a break, which we're fine. I'm fine going on. But let me tell you another thing. So I tell you, I was in misdemeanor court today, and if you hire a lawyer or if you have a lawyer, to me, it's just like having a medical doctor. Okay. If I go to a medical doctor, I'm going to him. Why? Because of his education and his experience. And I'm expecting what he tells me to do is going to be the best thing for me. Right. I should do it. All right? Well, the same thing goes with a lawyer. You know, we have a lot of education. I mean, it requires a lot of schooling and then continued education each year that we have to follow and do. And then you have a lot of experience. So you know how courts work. You know how law applies. You know what's relevant, what's not relevant. You know what gets in and what doesn't get in. So if you have a lawyer saying, hey, you need to do this, it's probably a good idea to listen to him.
Exactly.
I.e., I had a client today decided she wasn't going to listen to me. She just wanted to take this stuff, and now she's sitting in jail. So
Popo got a hold of her.
Yeah, well, and it was just crazy because she could have walked out in a lot better shape than she is right now. No jail time or anything else. Yet she wanted to tell her side of the story, and I was trying to explain it. It's not going to work. It don't work that way.
Right.
So she learned a lesson hard way.
If Melvin tells me it's Thanksgiving, I'm buying a turkey.
It's either Melvin or the Popo. Which one do you want? Yeah. You're listening to Understanding the Law. We'll be back in just a moment.
When a disaster occurs, neighbors and community organizations want to reach out and help. But this isn't always easy. That's where your local Cullman County VOAD can help. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. Your Cullman County VOAD serves to coordinate relief efforts throughout the county during times of crisis to ensure no area or family is left unassisted. But to do this, the Cullman County VOAD needs your help. Whether you're an individual, faith-based group, civic organization, or business, your Cullman County VOAD needs your help. To learn how you can be a part of the Cullman County VOAD, call the Cullman County EMA at 739-5410, 739-5410. Email CullmanCountyVOAD@gmail.com or search Cullman County VOAD on Facebook. Your Cullman County VOAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster.
Are you having trouble seeing your computer screen? Are the traffic signs looking a little fuzzy? Are the things that you used to be able to see looking just a little out of focus? Dr. Wayne Fuller has been helping Coleman see better for years, and he's still located on 2nd Avenue between the Catholic Church and Highway 278. You can call his friendly staff at 256-734-1121, and they'll be happy to get you seeing better, whether it's with contacts, glasses designed just for you, or a low-cost alternative to LASIK. Again, Dr. Wayne Fuller is available at 256-734-1121.
I read a blog today from a runner who said he noticed a difference when he smiled and nodded and gave thumbs up to drivers who passed him while he was running. He said the difference was significant. When he expressed a little acknowledgement, he could sense it being sent back. I think it might be time to realize that this observation is true in every circumstance, whether it be relationships, customer service, leadership, or parenting. When we acknowledge and show respect and kindness for others, it comes back. It comes back in a lot of different ways. Sometimes in thanks, sometimes in improved behavior, but most of the time in kindness return. It's a wonderful circle that should never be broken. What we have learned is simple. Thoughtfulness given leads to thoughtfulness returned. Kindness shared leads to kindness received. Give it a try. It'll come back to you, and it'll make your world a little kinder. I'm Ed Harrell, founder of The Kindness Revolution.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
I just had a question why that happens.
Welcome back to Understanding the Law with Triple Threat, Bruiser Brody, and Charmin Champ Crocker. Now rip the knob off and don't change your dial. So look, I understand, you know.
They don't have knobs on radios anymore.
Do they not? I do. I've got an old Ford that's got a knob on it.
Buttons. So I got the buttons.
Oh, y'all fancy.
Do you used to have the rotary phone,
yes,
the rotary dial phone?
I did have one at the house. My fingers are tore up, too, from that. Champ doesn't even know what a rotary phone is.
Champ,
he's so young.
Rotary phone,
oh, I do. Life. And in fact, the radio that my family is listening to is one of those where you turn the knob and it's like the 94, 96, and you have to get it just right.
Hey, you gotta be careful. Right. Whoa, stop right there. I can hear Live 95. Stop right there.
That's it.
So, Champ, when you was a boy, did you have the rotary phone that was sitting on the table? Or was it one mounting on the wall? Had it got on the wall?
We had both.
No, we had one on the table.
Had one on the table, yeah. Because I remember my earliest years, They didn't have them on the walls. Yeah. Yet. They were still on the table. We had a big old black phone.
Oh, yeah. So, look, if you're a teenager, you're listening to Live 95, and Jay says, be the 10th caller. And you're just wearing your finger out, you know, trying to be the 10th caller. Don't you know that was crazy back in the day?
Oh, you know what? I forgot about that. You know, they used to have, Champ will remember this. You was around here, wasn't you? When did you come back?
I moved to Coleman 78.
Okay, so you was around when the Pharaoh shop was here.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. So, anyway, I don't know why I thought about the Pharaoh shop. Yeah, Pharaoh shop was great.
It was huge.
But buying tickets, yeah. So you'd go in there and try to be the certain – well, if you called Ticketmaster or whichever one it was trying to get the number into – if you didn't go to the Pharaoh shop, stand in line, you stayed at home and try to call the numbers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you'd dial that stupid number. It'd be busy, then I'd hang up, then dial that stupid
all
number
over again.
Oh, it's horrible.
What if you had a redial button back in the day,
Lord,
man?
Because we evolved from the one on the table to the one that was mounted on the wall that the rotary was on the phone part.
Yes.
And then we got – was big time when you had the rotary button on the – on the actually the head, the earpiece that you had, the handpiece. Mm-hmm.
Daryl and I were talking about this the other day. You get so ticked off. Somebody hung up on
you.
Oh, yeah, you have to redial then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ain't calling you back. You hang up on me.
That's Champ, was you on party lines? Did you have a 2 or 3 party line when you was a kid? Do you remember? Where household shared a line?
No, we never had one of those.
Oh, I did. We had a 3 or 5 party. I can't remember when I was a kid. There were some places in Coleman had 10 or 12 parties. 10 or 12 households shared the same phone line.
You knew everybody's business. Keep your mouth shut. Don't be talking dirty to anybody.
Yeah.
Especially somebody else's wife in the neighborhood. Goodness sake. Oh, my goodness. Look, I'd pick up the phone and just listen for hours, probably.
Learn some gossip.
I'd have a blast.
Right. We had the scanner, though.
Oh,
yeah, we had the scanner back in the day. Yeah. My mom listened to the Coleman City Police, and, I mean, everybody was nosy back in.
Mm.
They had to know what was going on in the city.
Now we just have Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook tells everything.
Yes. That's it.
A lot faster than the scanner.
Yes. And a lot of things that I don't want to know about people, they're going to tell me about it anyway. So
voluntarily.
Yes, I know your smut already.
Hey,
next day they apologize. I shouldn't have said that.
And another public service announcement, man. If you're in a custody issue, whether it's a divorce, whether it's something in district court where maybe the parents are not married, and especially 100%, if DHR is involved in your case, they are stalking your Facebook.
Oh, like of course they are.
You can't believe.
Of course they are.
They know everything you do, where you go, and all this stuff. And it is, and I mean, we tell people, stay off of it. You know, stay off Facebook. Don't do that stuff. And they'll do it. And I mean, then we're in court all the time. But just new stuff coming up, new things going on, judge, blah, 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 and everything. I don't have to ask the workers, how are y'all learning this stuff? Because I already know the answer.
Exactly.
You know, all I do is get on a Facebook page.
Yeah. How many people have you seen get fired from their job because they're slamming their employer on Facebook?
I see
it all the time in the news.
Yeah.
Fired them. Yeah, keep your mouth shut.
It's not smart. It is not smart stuff.
So let's go back to the lady that you had and ask them, can you and Champ both, why do people want to take law into their own hands into the courtroom?
They don't understand. For instance, today I think a lot of people, because I know that's the situation today, they think they can explain themselves out of it. Okay, there's a lot of jailhouse lawyers out here. There's a lot of lawyers out here. I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't take this. I wouldn't take that. That's never been in a courtroom. They probably watch TV shows and they think they know some of the law and stuff. So these people come in with this false security thinking, hey, I know the law. So and so told me I wouldn't do this, you know, and they think they can explain their way out of it. And even if you got legitimate explanations, this person had a legitimate kind of an explanation, but it wasn't relevant to the charge. It's not a defense to the charge, you know. And unfortunately, when you're sitting there, I mean, you got a charge. State's got a burden of proof, and you either have a legitimate defense. And if they meet that burden, you've either got a legitimate defense or you don't have a legitimate defense. No, I mean, so you may have a defense, but the question is it a legitimate defense? She didn't have a legitimate defense, even though she had a story and right. She had a reason. It just didn't fit. It didn't right. work well for her.
So, Champ, do you have many of these in your career happen to you?
Case in point.
here we go.
Probably 2003 or so, I was a relatively new lawyer, and I'm not going to call the guy's name because Melvin probably know him too, but we're up there for a probation revocation. And, you know, when you're on probation and you get brought back to court,
yeah.
you know, the worst thing that's going to get you in trouble is committing a new crime.
Right.
You know, sometimes if it's a technical violation, they'll cut you back. If you commit a new crime, you're probably going to prison to serve the remainder of your sentence. And this gentleman who was on probation got caught with drugs on his person. And they found some sort of, I don't know what kind of drugs it was, but it was illegal, and it was in his pants pocket. And he had a hearing on it. And I hope you weren't his lawyer, Melvin. Before I tell you.
We had, I just hope it wasn't me.
We had a hearing on it, and he began, you know, saying he wasn't guilty. And the prosecutor said, "Well, we found these drugs in your pants. What do you say to that?" And he said, "Well, they weren't my pants." That's not a legitimate defense.
What my pants?
Yeah. That's not a legitimate defense. Because you were wearing them.
You were wearing them. They're in your pocket.
Yeah. You know, and I don't think a lot of the – I don't know, Champ may know this. I don't know that some of the rules that apply for the actual criminal charge may not apply for the revocation hearing. So here we go. Here's an example. So like that guy that's caught with drugs in his pants, let's say his defense was, well, that was an illegal search and seizure. That may be a good defense for the actual new crime, but I don't know that is sufficient in a probation revocation here. That the fact that it was an illegal search and seizure, I don't know if the judge chose not to take that into consideration. If they said, well, it don't matter if it's illegal or not, you still had drugs
exactly.
on you, and you're violating yeah. the terms of your probation.
If I'm a judge, that's what I'm
that
saying.
Could probably right. still violate you. You know, and then you can argue that illegal search and seizure later on. Which
yeah, because it's a lower standard yes. for revoking probation than to yes. convict of a crime. Yeah,
yeah, because like in probation revocation hearings, hearsay and stuff gets in, but you can't be revoked so based solely on hearsay. But if there's anything outside of hearsay that corroborates your charges, you know, you can be revoked for the charge. So. You know, and it's just things like, you know, ask them jailhouse lawyers and some of them, you know, and you try to explain to them, look, you're probably better off. Let's do like this. Let's do like, oh, no, no, no. Like, okay.
How quick are you going back to prison if with this new drug deal that you done or whatever illegal that you done? How quick are you going back to the pen now?
Well, they've got the option of having you held until you have a hearing.
All right, so you're going to go to the county jail.
You could be in the county jail until you have that revocation hearing.
And they're not fast. I mean, it's usually not 30 days.
You're sitting in the county for a while?
You could be sitting there for 60. It's not uncommon to sit in jail for 50, 60, 70 days. Because what happens is when we have these hearings, a lot of times judges say, well, how much time you been in there? And these guys know, I've been in there 68 days, 12 hours, 13 minutes, yeah. 45 seconds. You know, they know how long they've been in there. So it's not uncommon to be sitting in jail for a month and a half, 2 months waiting on your hearing.
Yeah, and that's I think that's true in Alabama and in yes. and in most places. You know, yes. I had one client who went down to Destin, got in trouble. He said he went down on vacation and came home on probation.
I've heard it all. But how fast? So once you get in there and have your hearing, how fast are you going to prison? If you get revoked, that means your probation's over with, and you belong to the Department of Corrections. Right. So the question is, well, how long, you know, are you going to spend your time in Coleman? In some circumstances, and that kind of adjusts and changes ever so often. Some circumstances, you know, you can stay in Coleman. The judge can order you stay in Coleman, and sometimes they do. If you got somebody that's a theft case, owe money, you know, trying to get the victim's money back and stuff like that, what good are you doing sending them to penitentiary?
Right.
So sometimes, depending on the crime and the person and their history, and as long as they don't have violent crimes and stuff like that, if they're already on work release in Coleman, sometimes these people go back to the judges say, stay in Coleman, continue work release, because they know that that money that they're making goes back to paying the court right. costs and fines and the restitution to the people.
So Joe Blow, he blows up his probation, he has his hearing, he's going back to the pen and staying a while. Now, if he wants to get probation again to get back out, how bad is it now that he's already broke it and went back to prison?
Well, it's no longer probation at that point. It's parole.
Parole.
Paroled at that point.
Is it going to be harder for him to get paroled out again because of him breaking that probation?
It should, and I think it does have some effect on it.
Hey, look at that.
Because the same people that supervises the probation supervises the parole.
Okay.
So see, like the probation officers in Coleman are the Alabama probation and parole officers. Mm-hmm. So the difference is on probation means you're not in prison.
Right.
You know, and you escaped prison or you served your time. So some people, like for instance, I know a case right now I'm working on. This guy out of Walker County's got a 5-year sentence, split served one. So he's got a 5-year prison sentence, but he's ordered to serve at least 1 year of it. He's ordered to serve 1 year of it. So once he gets that year up, he's done. So the other 4 years are suspended, and he's placed on probation for 4 or 5 years. So as long as he does what he's supposed to during that probation period, his 5 years he don't have to serve.
Right.
But if he messes up, he's got to walk the line. Right. If he messes up during that time, that 5-year probation period, I think it's a 5-year probation period, then he's got to go back and serve his 4 years. Hey, listen to this. I had one this year. What was it? Oh, man. They was within couple of weeks, literally. They had a huge sentence. This person had a 15-year, because he was a career criminal, had a 15-year sentence, had already served a couple of years of it, for whatever reason. I guess they probably pled guilty to the 15-year sentence, split two to serve. So he went and served 2 years, got out, and I mean was ending their probation and tested positive or got busted for drugs, did something within 2 weeks of being clear on their probation. So at that point your probation time stops. That's what they see. This person, another jailhouse lawyer, got in jail, had a hearing a couple months later, said, well, I'm off probation. They can't revoke my probation. I said, no. You messed up 2 weeks prior to the end of your probation. He's like, you mean I got that 15-year sentence in front of me? I was like, yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep, you got 15 years.
Well, and don't you have to do a year and a day? And then a year and a day? Like, if you're sentenced
a year and a day is a felony. Any crime
is a minimum for a felony.
When you have probation revocation and you broke probation and you go back to jail and you wind up in prison, you don't qualify for going back on probation or parole, and you have to EOS to get out.
You can, but most of them, depending on the crimes, you know, when we're talking about depending on the crimes, is it a property crime or is it a victim crime? Is this a robbery case where you rob somebody? Is this a burglar case where you break into somebody's house? Is this an assault case, you know, murder case or, you know, sexual offense case? If you actually have a victim, a person victim, that you've injured, then you're probably going to EOS. A property crime, drug crimes, thefts, and stuff like that, that more than likely now, because of the overcrowding and the issues they have with the prison system, you're probably going to get paroled out. But you're going to serve a lot of your time.
Okay.
But, you can't bank on it because there's people I tell them, I was like, look, you ought to parole out in a year or two or whatever else on this. You know, 3 years later, they're like, man, I thought you said I'd be paroled out. Now I'm going to have to EOS this thing. You know, and I'm like, okay. And then there's people that you think is going to sit in there for 5 years, and 4 months you see them in Walmart.
Really?
Are you kidding me? How'd you get out?
There is no lawyer, no DA, no judge who can tell you what a sentence is. Now, some of the guys down at the jail can get closer than anybody, like Melvin was saying a minute ago.
You know, I can imagine some of these career criminals that may have 4 years probation. Don't you know that they're probably yancy about that entire 4 years? Because I'm just thinking, well, here we go. We got private talking. I'm thinking if I'm on probation for 4 years and I'm a good, nice criminal that I'm doing something, that's a lifetime for me to sit there and be a good boy for 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to screw up somehow. And, hey, look, it's my favorite person that will never come co-host with me because she's always got something to do. Retired Coleman County teacher from Welty Elementary School, Brenda Cuz Parrish, is on Understanding the Law. How are you doing, Brenda?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Well, look, I am in a room full of attorneys, man. I don't know what to do.
Well, listen, basketball season is finally over.
Yes.
So next Tuesday, it's finally time for me to meet with a lawyer.
It's time. Right. Next Tuesday, you'll be in with us.
Yes, I will.
You going to have us a topic?
Well, you know my topic.
Is it going to be about Alabama politics, by the way?
Be what now?
I said, will it be about Alabama politics?
Yes, pretty much.
Okay. Well, that's what we like to slam on.
Yes.
So what's on your mind tonight?
Nothing. I just want to let you know that I'm finally free.
She's confirming.
Confirming next Tuesday. Look, maybe we can get Champ to come back in next Tuesday and feel your wrath about the state of Alabama.
I don't know if he's ready to handle me yet. I think it should just stay with the lawyer.
The Alabama education system.
Champ probably needs to listen and get a feel first, and then he can join us.
I have a feeling Champ can hang in there.
Yes.
Okay. You think so?
Oh, I know so. Charmin Champ is the man of the hour. He is the most popular Coleman attorney out there, so.
Well, I'm sure he is.
I don't know about all that. But.
He's never met me. And Big D, you have. So you
I
know.
Have. I have felt your wrath in person, and I'm maintained. I mean.
So y'all have a great night. I was just going to let you know, so just get back with me, and that sounds good.
Well, has Brenda been a victim of a crime?
No.
I know she's going to say she is now. The state of Alabama is the defendant in that one, ain't it?
Yes.
I don't think so. Okay, maybe, yes, I have. Stolen identity.
Somebody stole yours? Somebody stole your identity.
Credit card, you know, things like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, use your... When you're saying stolen your identity,
my credit card account, yes.
Oh, use your credit
card. And even banking account, yes.
Now, was it your credit card that had a $100,000 limit on it?
yeah. I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
So, I don't get a retired teacher. We don't get $100,000 limit.
You know, because there's a crime of identity theft, which is using your name, your Social Security number, and some of that stuff to... I mean, it can be to do anything.
Right.
You know, you can use it
it's
without unauthorized. Oh, I understand. But, you know, then what is that called? Is it what's the crime, Champ? Is it unauthorized use or is it illegal? It's probably unauthorized use of a debit card or what is it called? Is that unauthorized?
Right.
There's another crime. It's actually using the
years ago when my son was playing travel ball, my second son, and stupid me, I had everything in my wallet, all three kids' Social Security cards. You know, things I can never get back, like my miniature diplomas from Auburn and Montevallo and Coleman High School, and you know, my grandmother's rosary, St. Christopher, stuff that you can never get back. But anyway, all that was stolen, and so I had to go the next day. And when I went, because I thought they would change my kids' Social Security numbers, you know, because this person had all this, and they were like, no, they don't. You know, your Social Security number is your Social Security number forever.
For life.
Yep.
And so I basically joined one of those, like, life locks or, one of those type deals so they could monitor our credit cards and all that kind of stuff to make sure that no one was not, using it that shouldn't. So
did they get it out of your car or something?
Yes, they stole all my cars.
Right. See, a person like that, you can get charged with unlawful breaking into a motor vehicle, get charged with the theft of the things, the value of it. You know, Brenda's probably she probably has a Michael Kors purse, so it probably automatically a felony because it's over $500.
I don't have a Michael Kors purse.
let me tell you something. She ain't got no Dollar General purse. I can tell you that right now.
And then
I called the Gadsden police and where we were, you know, it was kind of a rough part of Gadsden, and you know, I was like, you know, what if he uses my ID? What if this person, he said, most likely that person doesn't look like you, so you don't have to worry about your driver's license or whatever. But
well, it's devastating when it happens because I represented a person, another victim, Brenda. Someone used his ID and then proceeded to go out and get arrested.
Oh, no.
He got arrested. The imposter got arrested and went to court, pled guilty, because it wasn't him. It was mine. And we ended up having to go all over the state of Alabama to get these things lifted and dealt with. So identity theft is serious business.
My dad used to call it the cuss curse. That would so be my luck. But what was great was that one of the parents on the team was a police officer in Birmingham, and all the dads were like, you know, going up and down the road trying to see if they threw their purse out once they got, you know. And all they got, there was no drugs, you know, it's like Gas X and emotion. Nothing of value to them. But anyway, I realized when I was leaving, I had no money. My husband was working, you know, weekends at the time, so it was just me and three kids. And I was like, I live in your house? And all the parents were like, do you need gas money? And I was like, I think I do. And so it was just sad. And so you feel so vulnerable that you are put in that position. So the next day I had to take off school half a day to go get a new driver's license, go to the Social Security office, you know, do all this, cancel all the credit cards. And it's just the most frustrating. And that's why I tell everybody, make sure you make a copy front and back of every credit card you have, everything you own, and keep it on hand so that if something like that were to happen, you got that information.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Brenda, thanks for calling in. We look forward to seeing you come in next Tuesday with me and Danielle and Melvin and Champ, and we'll just sit around and have a round table talk about Alabama politics.
Hi, Miss Brenda.
Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Brenda.
Champ, it was good having you in on Understanding the Law. Hope you had a good time.
I did. I enjoyed it. It always flies by.
It does. I mean, one hour is like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I have a question for Champ.
Okay.
It's from Scott Edmondson.
Okay.
Okay, so the Equifax breach that happened a few months ago, people whose identities that were hacked, what's their resource or solution on solving the issues beside receiving a free credit report for a year to watch?
Well, it's going to take a lot more than that. It's going to depend on what the extent of the breach was, you know, whether there was I gave an extreme example earlier, but it is devastating, and these people are never going to be made totally whole, unfortunately. And even going to court and dealing with this in the ways that the law allows, it will take years and a lot of money to be made whole from that breach. Mm-hmm. And we're just starting to see some of the consequences of that.
Exactly. All right. Well, look, hey, if you can come by next week and hang out with us again, we would love it. Real quick, don't forget, Big D and Cosmic Sound DJ Entertainment presents JamFest 2018 Camp Liberty. It's going to be April 21st on a Saturday from 3 p.m. to midnight. Nashville recording artist Wes Brown is going to be in the house along with five other acts. Don't forget, April 21st, Saturday, Camp Liberty in Battleground, Alabama. You're listening to Understanding the Law. You can catch me again Thursday night for the Big D Radio Show, Thursday at 6:30 p.m. We'll see you next time.
No longer new, but still all Cullman. We are Cullman's independent radio station, Live 95, WRJMLP, Cullman.